21st day of June. Welcome to Sportsnet Today. My name is Ryan Pender. Sportsnet Today brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, proudly brewing their beer right here in Calgary. You can visit the tap room and restaurant in the Currie Barracks or find your favorite Wild Rose beer at bars and liquor stores around Alberta. Busy hour. We'll start with some footy conversation. We'll move into game three of the Stanley Cup final as well, where the Tampa Bay Lightning have given us a series here. Boy, you lose that one last night, it's curtains, and I think the interest drops significantly. Instead, they're a win away from evening things up before they head back to Denver. We'll see how that goes tomorrow night. Also, the Blue Jays lose the opener in Chicago. More drama between the Saudi-run LIV Golf Tour and the PGA Tour, with a big name switching sides in that soap opera. And more, but we open the program by heading to the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The 13-time Consumer Choice Award winners at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. It is Tommy Wheeldon Jr., the head coach and general manager of Cavalry FC. Tommy, good Tuesday morning to you. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thanks. You know what? I'm sat in the sun here at Spruce Meadows. Just before we do some video review and a training session with the boys. It's a good time to be alive.
Yeah, well, and you know what? It's a beautiful time of year. When I close my eyes and think of CPL, this is what I like. Blue skies, you know, the trees have leaves. We've got, head to the pitch, maybe listen to a band before the match, a beer. This is the right time
Sunday.
Of year.
Think about it. This is a build-up to Sunday. It's the it's our pride match. It's the El Clasico. We're at home. We're top of the standings. There's a lot to like about this Sunday's game.
Have I not said it's top of the table, Tommy Wheeldon Jr. with us? I didn't
mention you've
that.
Not.
I'm
you've
sorry.
Not.
So congrats on the run. We'll get to the news of yesterday and today that was made official in a moment. But just first off, how good are you feeling? And take us back to when you were two losses and a draw, two draws and a loss out of the gate. I'm trying to remember. You were certainly saying all the right things, but I do wonder if there was a little bit of worry that had crept into the room or anywhere in the organization.
We always know you're going to have some pitfall. It wasn't new to us. I think we in most seasons that we've actually played, we've had a four game without winning. We had it in the bubble. We had it in 2019. We just had never had it at the start of the season, and it'd been a strange one with the injuries and being on the road. It just everything compounded, and we looked at it. But it gives you a good time to humble yourself, to look at what you want, and it also challenges your beliefs, because you're like, well, do we need to change things? Do we need to change this, to change that? And we're like, no, we believe in what we were doing. It was just things were just starting to click, a few new faces, a bit of a tweak in our coaching staff. We trust in ourselves, and the players, I've got to give them a ton of credit, and the same with the staff is, we had an undefeated May, and that was because everybody just bought in. We've got a terrific culture, and we really do, and it's competitive as hell. You'd have to come up to a training session, you see it with the players, and I knew when you have that, games were going to turn around. We were going to get that win, and then the Pacific one started it, and then we just went on a run. And what's great about it, right, is we've only had three home games out of those 10 games, and we knew if we pick up points in the first half of the season, the back half is good for the run into playoffs, and that's where we want to make sure that we keep level-headed. Nice to be top of the table now, but it's how we finish the season that's always going to be the one thing that will be remembered.
Well, and one guy you won't have for the end of the regular season is Victor Laturie. He's off to Scotland, which is got to be bittersweet. It's very, very good in the big picture of the league and the team, but short term that leaves a hole in your midfield. Talk us about all that's involved in this, pros, cons. And first off, how's Victor feeling? You must be thrilled.
Yeah, I think to be fair to Vic, I mean, that's why we do this, right? And that's why the owners across the league have invested in the game, is to give young Canadians a chance to play on the world stage. We've got a World Cup coming up, and we've got to get to host a World Cup in 2026 as well. So we needed to start filling this pipeline, and now you're seeing that because, Abzi left from York to French second division, Victor to Ross County, and we were going to give Victor the weekend off to do it. We trained Friday and Saturday because we didn't have a game, and he turned up, he showed up, he still loves this club, he's excited with the opportunity that's going to go, but as a hometown kid, it was obviously mixed feelings for him, but he knew this was what was right for his career, and it's what's right for the club. So when I switch hats between the head coach, would I want to still have Victor Laturie in our squad? Absolutely. He's a terrific player with great energy and great quality. But when I think of a general manager, to be able to make this a business and create a transfer fee with then some sell-on opportunities as well. And it's the first of many, because I look at you know, Joel Waterman's doing well in the MLS. He was our first sale. You know, Mo Farsi's now made his MLS debut on the weekend. And, you know, now Victor Latori. Yet our team on the pitch, no matter who puts on the jersey, is still playing well and still winning. So I think that's a really good way of showing a sustainable and quality product.
So Victor's a Calgarian. He's 21 years old. He was here for the inaugural season as a 17-year-old, one of the very young, fresh faces of the CPL. What is the Scottish side buying here? Because certainly when you're 17, you know, there's some tools and you're a prospect, but you've used him a ton this year, and you hadn't in some of those early years because of how green he was. But he was playing at MRU 2 years ago, and now later this summer he's going to play in Scotland's top division.
That's brilliant. I tell you what Victor did. He took his chance, and he's always going to be a great story for us when we're educating our young players that either we draft or we bring through our pathway system here. He signed at 17, and we thought it was the same with Arabin Pepple when we signed him at 16. These young players need time, and it's hard to go from academy football, university football, and come into the pros where you're playing for points and people's livelihoods. So what we did at the end of 2019, after a really good season, he'd only played four or five times. We said, look, what can we do? Can we get him back, you know, playing more games? How do we do that? Well, university's here. He went to Mount Royal, went to Foothills, and obviously with the pandemic, that kind of nixed it a little bit. So as the season started going again in 2021, we felt it was the right time to bring him back in. We drafted him in the U Sports draft. He's come in. I think he played all but one game last season. We rewarded him with an extended contract. And in doing so, we also secured assets because, you know, when young players are playing well, that's what overseas, you know, now he's getting close to, what, 50-odd appearances for us. You know, clubs from overseas, and Ross County weren't the only one. They were just the first to act. So it was great. And, you know, I get phone calls all the time now, and I think it has been heightened with the fact that Canada have got to the World Cup, and people are seeing the Alphonso Davies and Jonathan Davids and players of that ilk doing well in Europe. Richie Larea is now at Notts Forest, and Kyle Larin and Atiba Hutchinson are doing well in Turkey. Sami Adekubi. You know, these guys are all starting to make a name for themselves. And I think now a lot of clubs around the world are going, right, what's next? And I think the Canadian Premier League has got great eyes on it. You know, Media Pro and One Soccer, they're doing great to push out content. And that content is picked up by scouts, by, you know, people. And Victor is one of those that he's aesthetically pleasing, and his data supports that.
So what's that conversation like? Are they asking about the human, or are they saying, look, we've seen video, but I need to hear through a coach's eyes what I'm seeing, or what's he like in training? Like, are these more audits on the human or the soccer player, or is it all the above?
Yeah, I think most clubs do all of the above. Like, I know we do it. You know, we're not bidding for players, but we're recruiting free agents, essentially. So when we do it, we look at, you know, I always say when we get a ton of YouTube clips, that's like your appetizer, right? That's your tapas. You look at that, excites you, then you start digging deep and you start looking at games and their actions within a game. Then you start, if that pleases you, you look at, you know, full games and where they move when they don't have the ball, you know. And then the great thing about it, I mean, I'm sure you've... when I watched that movie Hustle with Adam Sandler, I'm laughing because there's a lot of that goes on when you're scouting players. But underneath it all, it is about the person. And I think, you know, Ross County, obviously, when they spoke with us, that was one of the questions, because they're a hard-working club that have, you know, come out of nowhere and are competing against your Celtics and your Rangers on, you know, a smaller budget. But they're doing it now, bringing in young, dynamic players who are hungry and humble. And, you know, Victor fit that profile both on and off the pitch.
So, okay, let's go to the first to the pitch then. What does your midfield now look like? Are you confident? Is there major adjustments, or is this just what you've been doing all year? It's next man up, whether it's a purchase or an injury.
Yeah, a bit of both. I mean, you've seen us since 2019, and I think people almost forgot how good Elijah Adekubi was. You know, so when this deal was happening, we looked at it in a couple of ways, and before the Whitecaps game, when we knew the deal was going ahead, I spoke with Victor. Victor wanted to start in the Whitecaps game, and with appearance-wise, he probably could have or should have. But we felt that if we got past this in the next round, we needed to start living without him. So we started putting him on, you know, as one of our finishers, finishing the game out because he was sharp and he's technical and he's game ready. And then suddenly we had, you know, an injury, a suspension at right back. So he's played the last two games and filled in at right back, and he was so good at it. But what that allowed for is to give us a different look in midfield. So right now you've got, whether it's Elliot Simmons, Elijah Adekubi, Charlie Trafford, but Joe Dicar is 2 or 3 weeks away from returning, and he was our best player in preseason, bar none. All the lads thought it, we thought as a coaching staff, he's just started joining training, and he's like he's never been away. So we knew we could live without Victor. It wouldn't impact us there. In the same way we've been able to live without Anthony Novak or Tyson Farago or Fraser Ed and Tom Field, because we've always signed a deep roster that can play two to two and a half different roles. And I think our midfield's very good. And now we've got dynamic players like Sergio Camargo and Ali Moussi playing as that attacking 10. We've got balance in our midfield. So it wasn't an area where we felt we would miss Victor on the pitch as much.
It's fair. What does the money do? Your owners are there to not only develop the sport in the country, but it's nice for them to make money, but it's also nice for the GM to have a little more dough to spend. But there's also a cap of sorts in this league,
yeah.
And it's not entirely transparent. We don't get to see all the salaries. No. We don't know exactly how this all works, but through this, fogged glass, what can you tell the public about what this means financially for the club, for your budget moving forward, for the league, things like that?
So what it does, you know, I can't disclose the amount, but it was a six-figure fee, and I know that ranges from a big number.
Yeah, that is a lot. It is a big range.
Yeah, that is a big range, but it's exciting enough to say, oh, you've gone for a six-figure fee. Plus, there's add-ons for appearances, and there's a future sell-on. So if he does well for Ross County and, say, you know, Celtic want to buy him, we get a percentage of that future sale, which I think is good. And you know, what's great about this, you know, in dealing with horses here at Spruce Meadows, it's of the same ilk when you're selling your horse products. It's the same with players. You know, they become a value the more mature they get. And, you know, Victor's like that. So what it does do then, any money we've spent on our cap in Victor's wages, we get that back to be able to go out and get another replacement player. So right now we're in talks. The transfer window opens for us in July. So we will be announcing a new signing at the end, at the beginning of July as well, that we feel will add quality to areas we need. So I think it's that's probably as much as I can share at this point.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good. And some good cliffhangers there, good teases for mm-hmm. Cavs fans in the second half of the season. So let's say Victor makes X, you've sold him off. Do you just get X back, or do you get his full salary? Is there sort of a bonus?
We get what he was making, his salary. That's just part of the league rules. We get that back to respend, so we don't go over budget.
Of course,
so that's, that's a good one. We don't get his transfer sale. That goes back into the coffers, which, as you know, in sports, it's a hard business to run, and it's a hard business to profit on. So it has to be, you know, the three biggest ones in any sport and industry is bums and seats, it's corporate sponsorship, you know, media deals, and player sales. So they're the big buckets that you want to do. And now it's nice to see that there's several players starting to be sold, not just leave. And I think that's, you know, moving forward, why can't we have our first $1 million sale coming from the Campiel in the next few years as we're leading up to the World Cup with more eyes on us, you know?
Sure, yeah.
There's, you know, if these players go on and do well, you know, that's small money when you're thinking of big clubs.
Now, and I guess the more money that comes into the league, the more the cap can move up, all that stuff. That sounds logical. What does this mean for other great young players in the league? And I guess maybe let's back it up. If the CPL is not yet in existence, is there any sort of certainty at all that Victor Latour is getting paid at all as a pro, never mind over in Scotland?
Yeah. Yeah, do you know what? If the CPL didn't exist, here's what would have happened. Vic would have stayed at Mount Royal University, got himself an education, and become something different, you know, and he'd have been a professional in another industry and would have played for fun. You know, I say Abzi at York, he's another one that was playing in the, you know, semi-pro league in Montreal in the PLSQ, would have done something similar. These guys are now being unearthed. They're given more of a time, and I love that window, hence why we started it when I was back in the Foothills days of that PDL, which was really catering for those 17 to 22 year old players, because I believe in that bubble. And you see that now, look at Cale Makar right now in the Stanley Cup, and you look at that age group, and had it not been for the development he had underneath, he wouldn't be ready and doing what he's doing in the NHL. You've really got to cater it. We often make decisions on players way too young, and at 16 they're not ready, and you're like, well, that's not right. And we're learning that all the time. Like I said, Victor Latour gave us a great lesson. He wasn't quite ready, but we took the time to get him in the right environment. Arab and Peppel, very, very similar. And we've got to keep doing that.
Well, this is pretty cool. Eddie's on the weekend. You've had a great run against them. It won't last forever. And I imagine they're only getting hungrier and hungrier. But the results have been pretty decisive this year against your provincial rivals in El Clasico. And it's a 5 o'clock start now, I'm being told. Is that right?
Yeah. We want people to enjoy the sun and the beer gardens and everything.
Good. So an earlier start, and away we go. Best of continued success, Tommy. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye. Tommy Wheeland Jr., head coach GM of Calvary FC. I think he had to go. Did he have to go? Like he was ready to go. Victor Leturi, that's a big, big piece of news for the CPL, for a Calgary kid chasing his dreams in a sport where there probably wasn't much of a pathway. Certainly you had Owen Hargreaves, and there's been other players that have gone to success in Europe without the CPL. Sam Adekube is just doing that now. Elijah's older brother in Turkey, he was the guy that dove into the snowbank and against Mexico and Edmonton for the World Cup qualifiers. Like there are these stories. Nick Ledgerwood from Southern Alberta, he had to go to overseas as a teenager. This is going to be more and more common, and it is absolutely so. This is at the crux of why this league is so important. If you're a fan of soccer, is that now there's a place for these guys to get seen, for them to be charted with good data, for other teams to look in and say, what is the talent here? And you've seen as a result a ton of these players from the league moving on to better leagues, and that's great for the CPL's future. Great for Victor. I had a chance to see him at the jersey unveil before the season started. Great kid. I, in my very brief meeting with him, felt him to be very, very humble and thoughtful young man, and congrats to him. His hard work's paid off. Wasn't the linear boom, away we go, next year better. It was back and forth, stops and starts. Pandemic messed that up as well, but there is a pro over in Scotland now. Great stuff. We'll take a break. We'll come back, revisit game three of the Stanley Cup final. The Blue Jays got a big hit from an uncommon spot last night. It wasn't enough to win. We'll see how they bounce back. The rotation's been an issue. And your other thoughts at 960-960 as we continue on Sportsnet today for Wild Rose Brewery. Check them out at their tap room and restaurant in the Currie Barracks, or find your favorite Wild Rose beers at liquor stores and bars around the province. They're proudly brewing their beer right here in Calgary. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We are back on Sportsnet today. Good friends of the tap room and restaurant. That would be Wild Rose Brewery. Proudly supporting the program. Proudly brewing beer right in Calgary. And you can proudly go buy their beer, liquor stores and bars around Alberta. Game four will go tomorrow night. Last night was game three. Tampa's gotten themselves back in this series. Tonight we have Blue Jays baseball on your radio. We'll be back to the NHL Stanley Cup Finals tomorrow. Jays send Kevin Gausman out. And he's had a rough go of late. The ERA, a tidy 3.21, but it was in the, low twos? Three starts ago. It's been three rough outings for Gausman. Might have been below two. Jeez. And before that, looking like a Cy Young-type campaign for the hard-throwing righty. It's fastball sinker. And when the player can guess which one it is, they got a better chance of getting a hit. If you can keep him off balance, he can be almost unhittable. We've seen both this year. And that's kind of been the story for a lot. Everyone not named Manoa or Stripling in the rotation. Like we've seen some good outings from Ryu, who's done now, and some really rough ones. We've seen Yusei Kikuchi go back-to-back really good starts against the Yankees and then look pretty trashy around those. We've seen Jose Berríos have near-career days. We've also seen him get torched for a bunch of earned runs and not get through to the fifth inning, four times this year? It's basically been Manoa or who knows what we're getting today. And Stripling's been great since he joined the rotation. Maybe we're just bracing for one of those starts from Stripling. But he's been their second most consistent starter for the last month since essentially Ryu went down. Gausman will get back to who he's been the last couple of years, which is better than his last three starts, but not quite as good as his first, let's call it, seven or eight starts. We'll see which end of the spectrum he's closer to tonight as he takes on the White Sox, who are fighting for one of those final wild cards in the American League. Blue Jays have played a very tough schedule. 37 games against teams with winning records. That's way more than the Yankees, way more than the Astros. But they've also lost 4 of 5, and the rotation has not been giving them the quality starts that we have come to expect, at least heading into the month of June. That being said, the bats have come alive where they'd been pretty sleepy for much of April and May. You can catch tonight's game, 6 o'clock right here, and it's on Sportsnet West as well tonight, and one, I think. It's one's where the baseball is at, but no hockey tonight, so over to West. Okay, good. Flames Talk 3, the Unnamed Football Hour in there as well this afternoon. Big show at noon, and Jeff Merrick will be with you in about 26 minutes time. If you missed it earlier today, Stephen Brunt, Frank Saravalli, and a lot of NHL stuff that we got to with him. Wow. And Adnan Virk. Not a lot of baseball in there. A lot of Montreal and not baseball in our chat with him. All that available wherever you get your podcast. That would be hour three for Virk, hour two for Brunt and Saravalli and the Pinder Report. That went in hour number one of Boomer in the Morning. Find that on your Spotify, your iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Give her a listen. Good one today. Back to game three last night. That's the Tampa we've seen before. That's Tampa at home. I'm thinking back through the series. They trailed, 1-0, 2-1, 3-2 against the Toronto Maple Leafs, if I'm correct. I think that's the case. So that means they lost one game at home to Toronto. They won two, so they're 2-1. They win both games against Florida in round two, so that makes them 4-1. Did my math work there? 2-1, 2-4-1. And then three more against the Rangers. They take care of business in games 3, 4, and 6, winning 4 straight to dispatch of them. 7-1 on home ice this postseason. Does that sound right? Math on the fly, a little bit scary. Now after last night, 8-1, that's a tidy mark for the Bolts at home, where offensively they had things going last night, no doubt about it. The question moving forward, how's Nikita Kucherov? Nick Paul didn't look right, left the game, came back, scored. Kuch's one-timer on a 5-on-3 late after getting hit hard by Taves looks a little not good if you're a Lightning fan, as he just simply left the 5-on-3 after the stoppage right to the bench. Okay, well, my night's done. Down the tunnel. On the other side, can Nazem Kadri get into form to return in this series? Who did the Avalanche start in net? A lot to unpack last night, and it was a lopsided Bolts victory, but one that gets this series back into a competitive spot. Nobody's lost at home yet, and if Tampa can keep that trend alive for one more game, we're tied. Tied. Heading to, where you want to be going, which would be a game five with all the marbles on the table if you're an NHL fan. The later and deeper this series gets, man, this tournament is so good, and I feel like we got two juggernauts here. We really do. GVP's with us in the other room. Wanted to dive into some post-game audio from last night. Who should we hit first? Are we looking at a Bednar or a Cooper thought
here? We got Bednar.
Okay, so we'll go to the Colorado head coach, Jared Bednar. That was their worst outing in the finals, but they were pretty much dominant games 1 and 2. Thoughts on the game, thoughts on some of the plays we saw, and thoughts on changing the goaltender, all that with Bednar.
Coach, what did you think was the biggest difference between tonight's game and, let's say, game one, and then just your overall thoughts on Darcy and kind of what went into the decision-making to pull him?
Well, I didn't love our execution tonight. Goals against kind of similar to game one. Like, I felt like we didn't make them earn a couple of those. And then we didn't win a lot of the touches that we won in game two for certain. You know, like wings on the walls. They airmailed a lot of pucks out into the neutral zone. Game two, we came up with all of them. We were sitting right on top of them, great reloads, and we came up with most of those pucks and transitioned them. Tonight seemed like they came up with them and came in our end. You know, that we had a couple bad reads, a couple turnovers. Like, I just felt like the goals that we gave up, we just honestly didn't make them earn it.
We'll stay front right.
Yeah, Jared, I guess following up on that, what will go into the decision about who starts in net in game four?
Same thing I always put into the decision.
What's your confidence level in Darcy right now?
Well, I didn't think he didn't have a good night, you know. Neither did our team. So, again, we win as a team, lose as a team. You can group him in with everybody else, you know. Just weren't as good as we needed to be.
Front left.
Touching on what you were talking about, the goals, not letting them earn the goals that they got. Is it almost, not that I would say better, but is it almost nicer to know that you can look at the film and just correct a few mistakes to have a better game? Or how do you go about kind of reviewing this?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, that's what we talked about after game one. You know, we thought we had a really good game. I thought we did some good things tonight. There was some things that I really liked from our group. Wasn't consistent enough, but the execution and some of the turnovers. We gave up one on an easy turnover. We had good numbers back in the zone. We turned it over, ended up in the back of our net. They executed quickly on our mistakes. But, you know, we had two on the rush coverage right away, had a turnover, had a missed coverage where they found F3 all alone in the slot where we lost a wall battle. I mean, some of those things, like in the first couple games, we were really good at. So we'll look at it and correct it, no question. So I think, you know, it's on us. I mean, they played well. They played hard, no question. We knew they would. But we had to be a little bit better than that.
On the left side, Guillaume.
Hi, Jared. What did you think of the delay when they asked for a review on Nishushkin's goal in the first?
The length we normally get.
Is he to handle that, knowing, like you said earlier in the series, that he doesn't have to carry it all on his shoulders, and maybe if he keeps getting the volume, that it's
opportunities eventually will create chances. You just got to stick with.
Take a few more for Coach on the right side.
Coach, already looking forward. What are the main points for your team for the next 48 hours prior to the game four?
Regroup, look at the mistakes we made, talk about how to correct them, look at some of the adjustments they made, what we feel is really important to our game within the adjustments that they made. Some of them are obvious to me already as the game went on. And then, where I thought one of the big things is I thought, not that we didn't compete, because I liked some of our compete tonight, some of the things we did, but I think we had an advantage when it came to the competitive spirit in game one and game two, and tonight they had it. They played with a little bit more desperation. I thought we had a pretty good start, but, you know, you got to be able to, again, clean up some of the things that we didn't do well in this game, and, you know, that kind of gave them life. And then, you know, we Vasilevsky made some big saves.
All right, there's not the best there, guy. We're jumping all over with that, but there is some parts of Jared Bednar post game, head coach of the Colorado Avalanche. It is weird to hear that coach and that team talk about a loss, because it's been so rare in this postseason, and when you watch a team lose, then a sport, and you talk immediately after it, like, it's like, geez, boy, what went wrong? Like, things are wrong. Bad things are happening. We lose perspective, perhaps, on just how incredibly dominant they've been this postseason. Like, we're talking about zero losses in round one, two losses in round two, zero losses in round three, and they were 2-0 to start the final. Like, that's 14 wins and two losses before last night. That is so, so dominant. Do you remember in February the Calgary Flames went on that nice little undefeated run? You know, there was, geez, wow, 10, 11 in a row, that, you know, points in 15 of 7, stuff like that. Like, just rolling. They're doing that against the cream of the NHL. And, like, Nashville was not a bad team. Yes, they were missing their starter. Okay, sure, sweep. Round two, St. Louis, really good team. One of those losses came in overtime. You get a different bounce, you might have only lost one game in the first two rounds. I don't think we have to tell people in Calgary how dangerous Edmonton can be. Sweep! Came back from way behind in game four. And now the Tampa Bay Lightning, who we watch climb out of an 0-2 hole against the Rangers and remind us why they have championship pedigree, and they show us the lengths they're willing to go to cement wins in terms of blocking shots, playing tight defensively, down the tunnel and back all night, and they win the first two against that team. Colorado has been so good. So while I am curious if Pavel Francouz isn't their best goalie, I don't know the answer. I have a hunch he might be. They've also been so dominant, it might not be worth rocking the boat to put Francouz in for game four and you let Kemper start. He's certainly the guy with the better resume to this point, but I kind of like Francouz's body of work against Edmondson. Not all of it, but there's a shutout in there, and he gave them some saves when they needed. They clearly didn't lose a game, so he must have been doing some things right. As for last night, well, look, they got Tampa, and this is what we want. We don't necessarily need blowouts both ways, but we've seen in overtime, we've seen Colorado flex its offensive muscle, and now we've seen Tampa flex and Vasilevskiy was great, which he's had to be a lot in this series, in the OT loss in game one and certainly last night. Tomorrow night, 6 p.m., that is game four, and we'll see if we're heading back to Denver locked at fives. If we're heading back to Denver game five locked at twos in the series, or if Colorado can do something pretty special, be in a spot to win a cup on home ice in game five. There'll be some good stuff if they could do that at home. Those crowds have been unbelievable. Ditto for Tampa, but they've seen this before. Again, it's the first time Colorado's been past round two in the MacKinnon era. And if you want reason for optimism in this thing ending sooner rather than later for an Avs fan, check out what Nathan MacKinnon's been doing on the score sheet. He's been really quiet thus far. He's been creating a ton, but he hasn't been able to finish. It feels like that dam bursts at some point. It isn't a matter of if he's going to score so much as when it's all going to come together for him with puck luck, that hidden ankle, oh, knob of the stick, off the edge of a pad and out versus in. He's close. And if you're Tampa, look, you've been through the hard roads before. You were down 0-2 to a Rangers club. The narrative in round three was, well, Vasilevskiy, maybe he's not the best goalie, maybe it's Shesterkin. And it may be Shesterkin, but the team in front of him really locked things down defensively. From game two on, I think they allowed, one even-strength goal in that series? Let's go to the text line, 960-960. Hey, guys, was listening to the broadcast last night. They noted it's quite a run on home ice for Tampa. They won eight in a row at home. Their only home loss this postseason was game three against Toronto. That's a long time ago, Friday, May 6th. So we're talking a month and a half ago, they lose 5-2 at home to Toronto. Since then, beat Toronto, even that series at 2, come home down 3-2 in the series, season on the line, win that one in overtime to force a game 7 in Toronto. They take both, obviously, against the Florida club, games 3 and 4, to sweep them on home ice. They haven't had home ice the whole playoffs. They started at the road every single round. Games 3 and 4 against the Rangers, they come home, they win those both, they win the next two. One of those, again, back at Amalie Arena. After losing the first two, they went 4 straight to beat the Rangers, and now 1-for-1 against Colorado. I do think Colorado is the better team. I do think Colorado has more skill. I just don't know that it really means they're going to win in Tampa, where they've been so good this postseason. 8 in a row at home, 8-1 overall, and tomorrow night at 6. We get to see if they can make it 9 in a row on home ice. GVP, do we have any player audio from last night, reaction from the Avs or Lightning after the 6-2 victory for the home side?
Yeah, we got a quick thing from Stamkos.
Let's hear from Stammer.
Was in this position last round and coming home, and we knew that this is pretty much a must-win game for us. So I thought we played like it tonight. Our attention to detail was a lot better, and the game plan... not that it changed too much, but we executed it. So, way better effort for our group. And we knew coming home in front of our fans, it was going to be a little different. And certainly was.
Was different. Looked great. They need Cooch to be healthy. We'll see on that. Man, he's such a good passer. It's just, how are you seeing what he's... And it's just all over the place, little plays. They don't all work. And some of them go the other way. But just the level he's thinking it at to find people... before everyone else knows they're going to be there all night. What a treat to watch. And again, point didn't go last night. The Calgarian dinged up, as we know, severely out since the Toronto series. Played games 1 and 2, not in for game 3. Is he in a spot where he can come back for game 4? Where does a playing through injury Braden Point measure up against Riley Nash? I don't know. I feel like John Cooper's probably got a decent handle on it, but I don't feel like I'd be surprised either way if he's back or not because of how significant the injury is. So we'll find out tomorrow. Text line 960-960. Hey guys, has Johnny signed a new deal with the Flames yet? Yeah, I see what you're doing here. Don't play coy with me. GVP, do you think we would have mentioned it this morning if someone's been listening to the program, if Johnny signed a new deal?
I think we probably would have. That probably would have been pretty big news.
Rock it in with the break news bed and then all day just floor it with Gaudreau talk. What does that mean for the cap? Okay, Tkachuk next. man, I can't believe Johnny's back. What a year. Oh, we got Johnny coming on the program. Like, no, you will know.
I was scrolling through Instagram the other day, and then I saw the Flames Instagram post posted, like, just a photo of Johnny Gaudreau, and, like, my heart stopped.
Yeah, well,
like,
there you go.
Did he sign? And then
no,
confirmed, no. It was just the best photos of Johnny Gaudreau throughout the season. So,
yeah, let's hope there's some good photos of him in Flames jerseys next season, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every Flame fan wants that.
I said it. I had a big tweet. It might still be pinned to my Twitter account. Let's see if I left it up there. A bit of a thread on the thought of re-signing. No, it's not there. You have to hunt it for a bit. Of Johnny Gaudreau at a number north of 10. And a lot of people are really, 10's a big number for them for whatever reason. First off, cap's going to jump either in 3 years from now or four. So if you're worried about, well, is he still a $10 million player and down the road? Well, a $10 million player down the road is actually going to be like an $11 and $12 million player because the cap's going to grow. Revenues are going up. It's just the pandemic. It's the IOU being paid back from the players to the owners for not completely slicing their salaries to almost nothing when there was no fans in the building. And when you played a Stanley Cup final in August and not a lot of people watched on TV, all that stuff. So I'm not terribly worried about how the cap hit's going to age with Johnny Gaudreau. He's not a power forward. He's not a bad skater. He's a guy that's relied on vision and offensive creativity. Like, I don't think that ages poorly. If you're someone that chases people down and runs into them for a living and you've taken some hard miles, that's someone I worry about aging. Power forwards and big physical defensemen, I don't like the long-term bets with them. But if you're someone that skates well and or sees the ice well and that's where your success comes from, less concerned about term. So I'm not concerned about the term with Johnny, especially with the cap going up as well. The question is, if they couldn't get a deal done before the season when you knew you could lock him in, or, you know, if you don't lock him in, rather, that you could walk him to free agency and really not have any say in it. If you're having a good year, you're not moving him at the deadline. It didn't get done there. So if you're the player, your leverage is only going to increase. And I think you can feel it. You can feel it in the fan base almost. From when the season ended, exit meetings, Johnny's talking very positively about playing here long term. Well, boy, that's a while ago now. And geez, now it's 3 weeks from free agency opening, not 5 weeks and at a month. And it just feels like, well, if it hasn't happened yet, why hasn't it happened yet? And so leverage increases, I think, with each passing day. The player only is going to have more and more ability to say, well, actually, I think the deal looks like this. Because Johnny Gaudreau can go get this money wherever he'd like to, in a sense. And I shouldn't say wherever. There's probably a few suitors where he can make, let's say, north of 10 on a max term deal. Is the money the exact same? No. Are the tax climates the exact same? No. But generally speaking, he's going to get his 80-plus million U.S. no matter where he signs, or 70-plus million U.S. Of the multiple suitors he'd have beyond July 13th. But Gabriel Landeskog was the exact same spot last year, or a similar spot at least. Like, he didn't sign till the 11th hour with Colorado. And here he is on TV last night, tomorrow night, trying to lead his club to a Stanley Cup. I bet you they weren't real positive in the Colorado fan base when it was 6 hours till free agency and he hadn't signed yet, or a day out. So we'll see how this one's unfolding. Clearly, they don't want to negotiate in public. It's been the way it's gone the whole way. The general manager doesn't talk about it publicly. He shouldn't. It's not good for his business to do so. And for the agent, unless it's desperate times, you don't do that. And he doesn't need to do it. They've got lots of leverage here. So when we have news, you will have news. That's my guarantee to you. Sportsnet Today, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Check them out in their tap room and restaurant in the Curry Barracks. Or you can find them in your favorite liquor stores and bars. Go get your favorite Wild Rose beers. Why not? They're proudly brewing their beer right here in Calgary. Here's what's coming up. Jeff Merrick show around the corner. Big show at noon. Flames talk in the unnamed football hour at 3. And then right to the south side of Chicago, where the White Sox and Blue Jays play game two of a 3-game set. That's all ahead on your home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.